Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I'm glad you came by. I was hoping we could talk again this morning about the story that I started with last week in regard to adoption. I haven't had a lot of time this week to do any research, but I've done a little bit, and I've also gotten some more information from some of the people involved in what's going on with my friend. So we're going to talk about some of that. I'm going to bring Shelley in right away this morning. Good morning, honey. How are you?
Good morning, Renee. How are you doing?
I have a little bit of a hoarse voice this morning, but otherwise I'm good.
Yeah, I can hear it. I had a little bit of throat issues. My niece is sick in bed, actually, like a flu or something going on. And I felt a little, I wasn't even around her, and I felt a little bit of it yesterday. So I'm not hoarse this morning, but I felt like I was coming down with a flu. It didn't develop, but I kind of felt off yesterday with that. You know, just didn't. I felt like I was coming down with something, so I feel a little bit better this morning. But other than the hoarse voice, do you have any symptoms, or is it, you know?
No, I just my throat just felt real dry this morning, but I don't feel sick or anything. I just have a real scratchy voice. I guess I won't be doing any yodeling this morning, which the rest of the world.
Oh, and I was really looking
about.
Forward to it. So what's going on? I missed the first couple of seconds. So what's going on with the show today?
Well, there's been a lot more feedback in regard to what we talked about last week about the adoption agencies.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted to catch everybody up and let everybody know also something that is very sad to me and seems to be incredibly, incredibly wrong. And there doesn't seem to be a whole bunch of opportunities to fix it. In other words, in order to fix it, there's going to have to be legal pursuit. And that blows me away. So along with the fact that I think this whole thing that took place was a bit of a travesty, I think that now the repercussions of it are even worse than that. Apparently, when the adoptive family realized that there were going to be some repercussions as far as this young woman not wanting to have her son adopted out, I guess they were notified. I don't know. I don't know whether they were told, you know, somebody called them up and said, hey, do you know this is going on, or whether or not there was some kind of legal information that was given to them by a lawyer or by the adoption agency. I don't have any of that information. What I do know is that they gave the baby back because they, and again, this is all second, third, fourth hand information. But more than likely is the fact that they were afraid that maybe the young woman who had this child would win this child back again. So they didn't want to fall so deeply in love that they would be, you know, devastated by this.
Exactly, right, so, right.
So there's lots. This is a circle of intense, intense emotion. And some real opportunity here for a lot of people to be possibly devastation that lasts a lifetime. So the child is back in foster care, didn't get given back to his mom, who has repeatedly said, please give him back to me. You know, I was under duress. I shouldn't have done this. I was also under the influence of barbiturates because I just had a cesarean, and it was so difficult for them to calm me down, blah, blah. No, they don't. And I have read, and again, I do not have first-hand knowledge that this is all accurately true, $40,000 is in the hands of Gentle Care that belonged to the adoptive parents.
Wow.
So now we're left to decipher whether or not
this is... $40,000 now go to... So does that mean that they just have another child, or that $40,000 has to be refunded in order to deal?
I have no idea. That's my point. I don't know whether now everything will go back. You know, what should happen is the money should be refunded. Absolutely. The child, there should be some kind of a hearing, I guess, just to keep things on the up and up so that people aren't making the decisions of the people who are set in place to make those decisions, such as courtrooms and judges and what have you, I guess. I mean, if it had been stopped before it went this far, then I think that would have been different. There could have been a time when somebody in Gentle Care stood up and read everything that was going on and said, you know, I don't like the way this is being handled. We need to, you know, reevaluate this case and do what is right for the baby. So now the baby's in a system where, for all intents and purposes, it appears as though he has no parents, when he actually has two sets of parents that wanted him and love him. And one set gave birth, and the other set paid $40,000 for him. So,
wow.
This for me, this is like, are you serious? I didn't know we could. I didn't know we could buy kids. I really didn't. I had no idea. I knew always that there was
city in many ways.
Factors.
Yeah. Now, children have always been a commodity in certain areas of our society. I think most decent people don't look at children as a commodity, but there's a very large cross-section of our society all over the world that just look at children as property, look at them as commodities, look at them as income streams, you know, what they can generate. And it's awful.
Well, I did know, and I'm very well aware of the fact through the years, that there are people out there who, in the guise of loving children, take in more children than they really have room for, take in more children than they really have patience for, to make money off the government. I know that, and I've seen that many, many times in my life in various places. I've seen it here in Florida. I've seen it up north. I know that that takes place, but that's, I don't know, that's kind of a different arena. That's a place where you have to at least follow some guidelines, and these families are supposed to be evaluated on a regular basis, and I also know just from things that you read and things that we see on the television and everything that that also doesn't happen a lot. I mean, I didn't look any of this up yesterday, but I was, of all the stories over the last 10 years of children that have just disappeared, because they were in the system, and they were supposed to be with Mr. and Mrs. whoever, who have several children and who have been involved in the adoption or foster care system for many years. And nobody ever checks on them because they passed all the preliminary testing and now they've had kids for 4, 5, 10 years, whatever the case might be. And all of a sudden somebody looks for Susie Q and they don't know where she is. And
right.
Nobody checks. Yeah, I mean, we read stories like this all the time, right? Heartbreaking, but nonetheless
right.
Not unusual. That's the sad part.
And like everything else with the government, you know, they use the excuse that they're understaffed, you know, they don't have the time to check in on these people over and over again because now they're checking new people that are coming on the block that want to foster and stuff like that. And like a lot of other systems, it's broken. The intention was good when it got started, but it got too big too fast, and you either have some employees that are just so overworked that truly care and can't keep up with their workloads, and you have other workers in these arenas that are supposed to be checking up on families that unfortunately really don't care. They're just paper pushers. They're just trying to get their check at the end of the week, and they're going to do it as you know, as easily as they can without breaking a sweat. And it seems these type of jobs attract both ends of the spectrum with overachievers and underachievers, and it's a shame because you're not talking about. If the job isn't done right, you're not talking about the wrong color being painted on your walls or some such job like that, which can be fixed. You're talking about the formation of adults. You know, the formative years as children, it creates what kind of an adult they're going to be. And if their childhood is traumatic, you've created an injured adult. And unfortunately, I hear so many people talk about, at all costs, keeping kids out of the system, because once they're in the system, it's near impossible to get them back out. And that's it's a comment I've heard a couple times in the last couple of months on having nothing to do with adoption. This is another related issue, but they say at all costs keep your kids out of the system, because once they go in, it's so difficult to get them back out.
Well, and I think that's another one of the problems. So what's the deal with that? Why is that? Why does that happen? Where is the break in that scenario? Whose fault is it? Like the situation that we're talking about right now. If we started from the very beginning, something happens in a family, like what happened here, in the story that we've been talking about. And does anybody realize what kind of hormonal imbalance takes place in a woman when she is pregnant? I mean, I didn't hear any talk about that. I didn't. I heard conversation in regard to being under duress because the husband was upset and because of what took place and the scenario with the other person that was involved who didn't care anything about it and just said, just do what you need to do and leave me alone. And then a husband who has helped raise all these kids and is a part of this family, he reacted with emotion. And, you know, I guess that's justifiable. But all that was handled badly, for sure. Not the family, because the family is under duress. It was the trained, responsible people who have been set in place to make sure that this thing that happened in this family was addressed, evaluated, and counseled properly. Instead, it turned into a $40,000 bill. And that's when all integrity was gone. That's when all reasoning was gone. That's when the welfare of a newborn, healthy baby boy was no longer in any kind of consideration. That's what is horrible about this. But then if you research the rest of that world, because now, you know, the can of worms has been opened, you see all the things that are wrong. Like what I just mentioned about the foster care, like the lost children that we've all read about and know about, like when the authorities haven't you checked on Susie Q? Oh, well, I know this family. They're wonderful. So then where's Susie Q? Right?
Right. Yeah, I don't know what the rules and regulations are. But it seems to me that families should have to go through, like, annual evaluations, and each and every child in their care should have to be seen at least once a year. I mean, to me, it should be more than that, but they seem to be having a difficulty with doing it once a year. But I think they should have to be seen once a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's set up that way, honey. I think that there is a protocol in place.
So you're saying they're just not going by the protocol because they say they know the family and they don't need to, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, if you watch the news and you see the interview with the people that were supposed to be the sentinels and keeping an eye on what's going on, things that they made decisions about, things that they are responsible for. Because, you know, the trickle-down effect is huge in this arena, huge. You have the parents, you have the decision-makers, you have all of these entities that have certain jobs involved in this whole protocol. And if the ball is dropped in any part of that, the game's over. I mean, you know, it ceases to mean anything. If you're going to put a child in a home where somebody's receiving money for the care of a child, your hopes are, of course, that they love the child, that they treat the child as their own, that this is not just an opportunity to make babysitting fees. This is an opportunity for a child to have an opportunity to grow up with a family. I mean, isn't that the way it's supposed to be set up? Isn't that the whole idea of all of it?
Of course.
And now
of course.
Exactly.
And the difference, and with foster care, what's so unique with foster care over adoption is that the birth parents are always in the picture. But I don't know how often birth parents have ever gotten their children back out of foster care. Some of these court cases that I see are actually the birth parents suing the foster parents because of one thing or another, and usually the suits are ludicrous, and they usually don't win. But I've seen instances where the birth mother or the parents got their children back out of a foster home, and then something happened to the child or property was missing, and they actually tried to sue the foster parents. And in those cases, it's kind of silly because you can tell it's just all about the money. You know, the children were taken very good care of. The few foster homes that I saw on these court shows I watch, I haven't seen one yet that was the type that we're talking about on the show where they're doing it just for money. Most of them are doing it because they have big hearts and they were just trying to give the children a little respite of some place to be that was safe and secure, you know. But that's the idea of foster homes. When kids go into foster homes, they're not supposed to be there for their entire lives. It's exactly that. It's a temporary situation. But sometimes kids end up in the foster system because of behavioral problems that arise out of being in the system, and then they bounce around, and that's when you have adults that are really, really dysfunctional because they can't find a safe haven. They go from one bad situation to another. They never get back to their birth parents, and they bounce around through multiple unhealthy foster environments. So the question arises then, if there's so many unhealthy foster environments, how do they get certified, and how do they keep getting recertified to allow children in there if they don't provide a good household for these kids, you know? And I don't believe that the kids are going to be unruly if they have a sense of security. So something's broken here, and I don't think anybody's addressing the bigger picture or even seeing the bigger picture.
And how do we know, Shell, that the powers that be are even being, involved in it? How do we know that the lower echelon of that system isn't making decisions based on something that we see a lot of, which is in good old American slang called cover your own ass? How do we know? How do we know somebody hasn't made a, realizes that they've made a big mistake, and in an attempt to not be blamed, or, you know, like a 10-year-old not get in trouble, then they're saying things that aren't necessarily true. And
you know, that's a great point. You've talked about integrity on the show before. We both have. And in certain arenas, that's even more critical than in others. And when you're talking about decisions where you're affecting somebody's life, I mean, in adoption foster scenarios, you're talking about a life. Because your decisions are going to affect this person now forever, all right? But when you're talking about making a mistake, and this goes for any job, this goes for any interaction with another human being, whether it's a paying job or not, but especially in a job, if you make a mistake or if you realize that you utilize some sort of error in judgment on going forward or not going forward on something, and then you see it a bad outcome because of your decision or your lack of making a decision, most people, if they're not responsible, if they don't have integrity, will do exactly what you just said. Now they go into cover-up mode. Now they go into cover my butt. I have to figure out a way of wiggling out of this so that nobody thinks I did anything wrong. When actually, just came forward and said, wow, you know, I handled it this way and this bad thing happened. How do we fix it? And everybody brainstormed to make the best possible outcome going forward. All right, because that would mitigate the damage. That would mitigate the harm. That would mitigate the explosiveness of the bad decision. But when people try to cover their butt, what they do is they delay the process, and it usually gets even worse before at some point it gets better. And guess what? It always comes out anyway. So by you trying to cover your butt, by you trying to pretend that you didn't make a bad decision, it comes out eventually anyway, and you look even worse, because now you've compounded the original mistake with being disreputable or lacking integrity or being outright dishonest. So, and so many people go there, and it's such a waste of time. It's such a, you know, it just increases the original error like 100-fold. So when you talk about integrity, living by integrity makes life better and easier. It doesn't mean you don't suffer consequences. It doesn't mean that maybe you won't have to suffer some embarrassment or feeling bad. But you know what? It's a lot easier to heal from that than to heal from lacking integrity and having that blow up in your face 6 months later on down the road. Deal with it as soon as you realize you made a mistake and try to fix it in the best way possible for everybody.
Well, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? I think by the time most of us are in our early teens, we've already made an uncountable amount of mistakes. And there's an old adage about learning from your mistakes. And fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. All those old sayings are about making a mistake or making a poor decision and making that mistake turn into a valuable lesson that increases your integrity, increases your ability to make better decisions that especially decisions that will have an effect or a snowball effect on those around you. So, but very sadly, the immaturity of some people, it's all about just, you know, just saying something mean back, you know, like, oh, what do you mean I mean? Like the girl that counseled the young woman involved here. The first time I read the story, I was like, I'd almost need to see the credentials of the woman who made these decisions. And then unknowingly, I said flippantly, I might add, what is she on commission? And now I find out, yeah, that's exactly what's going on. She's on commission. So, but it still, if you look back, I mean, I've said things in my lifetime, and I'm ashamed to say it out loud, but it's the truth. I've said things where I have stepped right in to it. I have opened my mouth and inserted my foot more occasions than I care to remember. But instead of standing there for the rest of your life with your damn foot in your mouth, you got to pull it out and say, look, I don't know what I was thinking. I didn't mean to do that. I think I've made a mistake. Let's look at this and reevaluate the decisions we made. Somebody's got to stand up and say that. Otherwise, the problem just, you know, it just gets so far out of control that nobody can fix it again. I watched a show the other night about the Monica Lewinsky thing, you know, where she's now written a book and she's ashamed of everything she said and did. And I mean, I thought to myself, who cares? Who cares? Stand up. You should have stood up then and said, you know what, I was young and foolish. And I don't know why I did what I did, but it happened. And the one who was really to blame wasn't her anyway. She was like a pawn in the middle of all that fiasco. The one who should be ashamed of himself isn't ashamed of himself either. So ashamed that he got caught, but that's about it. But again, look how big that got. People are still talking about it. How many years has it been since Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky happened? 20 years? But it's another one of those scenarios that nobody ever told the truth. There were just more stories and more stories and more stories, so it gets bigger than life. So in a situation like this, it was wrong to take this baby from a totally under duress yet capable in a good, beautiful home with other very healthy children, with a loving relationship, with lots of friends. The baby never should have left that home, never. So the first mistake was made. Then all the repercussions since then have just dug a deeper, deeper, deeper hole. So now to fix this, all kinds of really, you know, heavy-duty powers need to get involved to fix it. But will they? Because now they're afraid to make a decision. Now they're afraid to say what's right and what's wrong. What's right? What should happen here, Shel? What do you think should happen here? Uh-oh. I guess I lost Shel. She'll probably...
Oh, sorry about that. No. I accidentally muted the phone. I hit the button. I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. I think the baby should go back to the birth mother. I don't know why there's all this controversy. You know, when you hear the facts laid out, you know, her condition, the fact that she was medicated, the fact that she wasn't given appropriate counseling, the fact that she does have some Indian heritage and was actually informed not to answer that question properly.
Now I've lost you, Shel. Well, and that's all true. All of the things that we just talked about, that Shelley just said, are all true. So if you were in the position to be able to make a decision, what would you do? Would you say, okay, and maybe to safeguard, and maybe to cover the bases or the other part of your body that I mentioned before, you could say, okay, under these circumstances, we will put the baby back in the birth home and, you know, we'll have counseling for the whole family. You know, the other children.
I didn't see Diana's phone in there.
Good morning, everybody. I'm back. We had a big power fluctuation here, and the phone and the internet and everything went down. Shelley, are you back in with me? Shel, call back in. Oh, wait. I think she did. Are you there now, babe?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah. Well, that was weird. Everything went off here. I heard the surge, you know, how the light goes brown and then, or dims and then everything. And then my dashboard stayed up and my Facebook page stayed up, but it wouldn't let me type anything in. And then all the wheels were spinning, you know, saying that everything was working. And the phone wouldn't let me back in. So
oh, okay.
I don't know what happened, but we're back.
Yeah, because in the middle of your comment, all of a sudden I lost you, and sometimes my phone goes into a searching mode. So I tried to, you know, to look for the signal again, and it just hung up on you. So I called right back in, and then I still couldn't hear anything, so I texted you.
Yeah, and so we're back. So the whole point that I just tried to make, and I don't know whether everybody heard it or not, is the fact that for some reason we think that when we've made an obvious bad call, then we're afraid to fix it. We're afraid to admit that we made a bad call. And so instead of doing the repair, we do a cover-up. We say, oh, no, that was what I should have done, and that's protocol, and that's how it should have been handled, and that's what we do. How many times have you heard people say all those things? A million?
Yep, absolutely.
So at the end of the day, though, this is major. This is, we're talking about a lifetime of someone, of many someones, actually. And I am, to say the least, bothered by the facts. And the facts are that evidently you can get away with almost anything if somebody is in a impaired state, in other words, undue stress, the inability to make a real call on what's going on in their own life because they're under such duress. And instead of setting up a valuable counseling arena, they're taken advantage of. And that bothers me a lot. That really, really bothers me. Because we talk about, Shelley and I on this show in particular, talk about asking for help. We talk about talking about what's going on. We talk about, you know, people can't help you if you don't say you need help. You know, how can you expect somebody to know you're under duress? I mean, if you're behaving strangely, and your family members see something's up with you, somebody in your family, in my family, it's usually me because I'm the one with the big mouth, say, what's up? What's your problem? What's going on with you? But if you don't have anybody like that, then it's up to you to say, I don't know what's going on with me, but I'm sad, I'm mad, I'm hurt, I'm angry, whatever the case might be, and it won't go away. Then you open up and you ask for that kind of help from the people who love you. But in this situation, that's exactly what she did. She went for guidance. She didn't really go in the end of the day. She didn't really go and say, you know, I don't want this baby. I don't think she ever said those words. But she did say, this is, you know, this has really sent a myriad of repercussions in my life, and I don't know what to do. And maybe the best thing is for me to put this baby up for adoption. That's what I'm being told to. Well, are you sick? No. Are you have no money, no income? No, I'm fine. You don't like children? No, I have five and I love them all more than life itself. Do you need some money to help during the pregnancy? No, I have insurance. All the questions that were asked. The answers pointed to a whole different solution, and instead, that solution was ignored. Why? Because there truly was a commission. There was $40,000 on the table, and that $40,000 made the decision instead of the person listening to the heartache and the duress that was being put right out there to a trained eye to see.
a supposedly trained eye. I still don't think somebody at 20 was trained enough for
exactly.
that type of a job. And, you know, that's a good point. Like, when I was working at the Institute, and I used to have to counsel people to make them more comfortable making the decision to come in and to take such a radical approach to trying to heal themselves. And I would counsel them. Well, sometimes when I would talk to people, I could tell that they weren't going to be able to go through the program that was offered. I could just tell by their mindset, their belief systems. And they would mention other programs to me. And I would, instead of trying to talk them into coming to the Institute, which I could have done by answering their questions in a way that would have made them feel comfortable coming there, I just simply said, well, you know what, this other program you just told me about, I said, it's wonderful. I said, some of our other guests have gone there also. They had great results. I said, why don't you go there first? Let me know how you respond to the program, because we're always here. And I have to be honest, there were a couple people that because I respected them, because I was honest with them and showed integrity, did end up maybe 6 months or a year later, end up coming and going to the program at the Institute. And by the time they did come, it was the right move for them, you know. But I allowed them, instead of looking at, because it was commission-based, instead of looking at my commission and saying, wow, I have to make this sale, I'm not going to get any commission from this person, I looked at what was best for the situation. If they had come in and done the program when they really weren't ready, it would have been bad for the Institute. It would have been bad for them, but I would have made commission, okay? So decisions cannot be based on either personal or professional financial gain. If that's the only reason you're making a decision, it's always going to blow up in your face. No matter what your job is, if the decision is based on the monetary income and not on the transaction, whether you're selling a product, whether you're selling a service, whether you're counseling, okay, if it's not in having that transaction be the most ethical, high-integrity transaction it can be, if it's only to get the money, it will always fail at some point eventually. And it may not happen right then and there, but you can't conduct business that way, regardless of what your business is. Regardless of whether it's a spiritual business or a product business or whatever, there has to be some integrity in there for what it is that you are providing. And the lack of that is why there is so much corruption right now, because people make decisions based on money and not on what it is that their business is all about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that pretty much sums up very sadly a lot of what's going on in our world today. A lot of what's going on in our world today. It is about the benefits that are in monetary form almost always. And
you know, it's so funny. The reason I gave the example about myself at the Institute is that people that don't act on integrity, people that don't act with ethics, you know, and they think that they're just sharks or that they're aggressive or something like that, they don't understand that in the long run, they're actually taking money out of their pocket. Because as people deal with you and they realize that they've been ripped off or taken advantage of, they're going to tell people never to go near you again. So you might hit a couple of really good big businesses. You might be going good for a while, but eventually your business will diminish because there's not going to be any word of mouth sales going on out there for you. Over the 2 years that I was doing this, my clientele increased more from word of mouth than anything else, because people liked dealing with me. They liked that I was honest with them. And most of the people, I would say after I was doing that for maybe only 6 months, everybody that called me said, so-and-so told me to call you. That's where all my calls were coming from. I didn't do cold calling. I was getting referrals from people that had come there that now wanted their friend or family member to call me, because I handled things with ethics, and I didn't. And some of the people that referred people to me were people that decided not to come to the Institute. That's the point I'm making, because I handled them ethically, and I said, well, maybe this isn't the right program for you now, but we're always here. And then 2 weeks later, their cousin calls me. because they liked the fact that I was open and honest. It really does increase your draw in any particular industry, and this is across all of them, okay, that you cannot make decisions based on putting money in your pocket. It will come if you do the right thing. I promise you, people don't believe it, but if you do the right thing, it will come.
Well, and at the end of the day, the right way is sometimes elusive. Now, let's put that out there. Let's say that a lot of people do things that are pretty screwy for good reasons, and they're just misled. And mistakes happen all the time. The trick to all of this is recognizing when the mistake has been made and fixing it, stepping up to the plate and say, look, I don't know how this happened, but I think about now things that were said to me. I reevaluate the way I felt. I did see somebody under duress, and I really thought, I mean, you could even say this, I really thought I was making the right decision, but I didn't.
Right.
Well, why is that so hard for people to say? I probably said it a million times in my life because it's happened more than a million times, and I always try to come from a good place. I don't ever try to come from a place of harm. So I know that if I do that, people that have, other things going on often do come with intent to harm. And those people really have difficulty stepping out of the mess that they've made for themselves. But if you've done something and you realize after reflection that it was wrong, then it's your job to say, look, I was wrong. I mean, we've all been there. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person. It just means that you made a bad decision. Now we have a very large organization who is still trying to, exonerate themselves by saying we did everything we're supposed to do. When they realize, I'm sure they realize, that they didn't. I'm hearing from the young woman in question. And they've already gotten information from Gentle Care saying things like, to the best of their knowledge, they didn't do anything wrong. But they also said in a letter that they may have done a few things wrong, but now it's up to you to prove it. They use different verbiage, and I don't want to quote because it's not in front of me. But in essence, that's what they said. And they're actually doing a form of bullying against the young woman who's immersed in this story. And she is moving forward with legal representation, and she's got a lot of people on her side, and what does that tell you? If a lot of people have rallied, and I've gotten numerous emails and postings, friend requests of people that want to be in touch with me on Facebook, and they've sent me all kinds of stories. The stories out there about this happening to so many people are heart-wrenching, heart-wrenching. This has happened to more than this young woman in question. This has happened to many, and some of them are in a place to fight it, and some of them aren't. And if they can't fight it, then they're, SOL, and that's the end of it.
What I was just talking about plays perfectly into what you just said. If Gentle Care would just simply say, looking over our conduct in this, we can recognize that maybe a few things were not handled appropriately, so we're going to assist this woman in reclaiming her baby. That is PR. That would send waves throughout the country. That would actually be more PR and advertisement for them than what they're doing. because what they're doing is now they're setting up bad PR, now they're setting up bad advertising, people aren't going to trust them. So I don't understand why these companies don't look at the bigger picture, okay? Pharmaceutical companies have a rap on that. They can put out the worst information, but they have the best PR team because they can put a commercial out there, tell you to buy this drug, and all they do is they have this beautiful music and these wonderful scenes to watch, and they can sell anything and tell you at the same time how bad it is and still make you want to buy it because they know PR, okay? This agency here doesn't understand anything about PR because the more they fight against this woman who, like you said, was almost coerced and not counseled properly, okay, they're making their agency look untrustworthy. They're actually damaging future business because people are going to be afraid to deal with them if this is what they do after the fact. Instead of working with the woman and saying, okay, let's figure out how to make this turn out the best for all involved. Not the best so we can keep our 40,000, okay, but the best for all involved, and really, really sit down and negotiate with the family and the attorneys and get this over and done with and not have this baby languish somewhere while they're all trying to hold on to their commission, you know? So this is actually bad PR for them. Why don't they realize that? It would actually be to their benefit to go ahead and lose this $40,000 because they'll make it up 10 times over with people seeing them as a true gentle care, as some place that you can trust and that you would want to go to if you had adoption issues. So, and especially in a case like this where you're talking about businesses that are more from the heart, where it's not a product or you know, or something like that, where it's more corporate involved. This is a business from the heart, and your decisions have to be, well, they should always be guided from the heart. All your decisions should always be from love, even if you are making a product and selling it. Because whenever you make decisions from the heart, they will ultimately always turn out to be correct and benefit you. Even if you don't see it immediately, it will happen eventually. And when you make decisions out of greed, that will also always eventually show up.
I want you to know that this young woman is listening to us, and she's writing me different things and filling me in on what's going on right now. She is listening to everything you're saying, and she just wrote, I love her. That's all true. And she says, we'll shut them down when this is over. National issue for people. They are done. And she's got, she's no schlep. She's smart, and she knows that what was done to her was wrong. In her moment of need, instead of getting the care and the love that she really needed, she got somebody who's working on commission. Somebody sold her an Edsel is what happened here. And they're bullying her now, and they are saying that, because you think we've done something wrong, I guess we'll have to fight you. So that's what she's doing. And we applaud you, honey. I want you to know that. My heart aches for what you're going through, and I can just about imagine how you feel every time you think of that little velvet cheek. I can just imagine. So, keep on fighting. I think I'm going to compose a letter, and maybe I will put it on a site, like a petition kind of a letter, but it will be kind and understanding and maybe give them an out, maybe give them an opportunity to change their story, realize their mistake, and think first of this beautiful baby boy. Maybe this is a time when if somebody like us stepped in and said, here's your opportunity to make this right. Don't dig yourself any further into the abyss. Give this baby back to its home, to its rightful mom, its rightful family, and make the right decision. It's not too late to make that decision. And if you do that, you have an opportunity, a chance, maybe, of rectifying this horrible wrong. If you keep fighting, you just look like, you know, the way the rest of the world looks. Uncaring, unkind, and out for the almighty dollar and nothing else. No one will ever, ever trust you again. No one. So, I think that we'll do that, Shell. We'll work on that together.
I think that's a great idea. And, you know, even the name of the agency, a lot of times, and everybody does this, okay, a lot of times I will choose to deal with a particular company because I like their name, because I thought that it was, if there was something in the name that was either clever or cute or there was something in it that sounded like high integrity, you know. And here, you know, you're looking for an adoption agency and you have a place called Gentle Care. I mean, just when I say those words, it sounds warm. It sounds like they're looking out for babies, you know, just the name of the company. Instead of going to ABC Adoption Agency, you know, if I had to choose between ABC Adoption Agency and Gentle Care, I'm drawn to Gentle Care because even the name of the establishment or the organization sounds like inviting and sounds like they get it to name their company that. And then behind the scenes, they're not acting on it. So it's almost deceptive branding in the way that they titled their company because it's not how they're handling this. You know, there's nothing gentle about this at all. This was, like you said, a used car salesman. This was a hard sell. This was there was tenacity involved in this, and it's almost like false advertising because there's nothing gentle about the way they've handled this at all.
Mm-hmm. You know, real quickly, while we've been talking today, I've been all over the computer. I want to read a couple things that I found on a site that is called ironically. It's an advisor. It's called Allot Finance. Now, I want you to keep these words in your mind. Allot, A-L-O-T, one word, finance. Explore adoption now. Florida Child Adoptions, we can help you with your adoption needs. Pregnant, maybe adoption, free housing, medical bills paid, money for pregnancy bills, choose adopting couple, contact us today. And then, because of my search, the benefits of hiring an adoption lawyer. Each state has different laws regarding adoption that can be confusing to keep them straight. That's why you must research adoption lawyers to ensure they have the experience and the skills to handle your adoption. Welcoming a child into your family doesn't always involve a trip to the delivery room or aspects of pregnancy. Sometimes it requires thorough research, assistance from a lawyer, and visits from an adoption official. If you are considering the process of adopting a child, know that it can take years to complete. Having a plan and an excellent lawyer can drastically reduce the amount of time and stress associated with adoption. Thousands of U.S. citizens adopt children from countries around the world each year. Undoubtedly, you realize the international adoption is challenging, but understanding the process makes it significantly easier. Adopting a child is a legal journey that should take a year or longer. While the process may seem daunting, aspiring parents should realize that breaking the adoption process into manageable chunks means less stress. Adoption can be a wonderful way to grow your family and provide a home for a child in need. There are important legal, financial, and emotional factors to consider before making a decision to add a family member. Everything that I just read talks about money and time. This took 7 days, an investment of $40,000, and a railroad job if I ever saw one.
Exactly.
This was not just unkind, it was unethical. And it speaks volumes about, and maybe the people at the top, which happens a lot, don't know what the people at the bottom are doing. You know, there's always that factor.
Well, how big is this agency, by the way?
I don't know. Carrie, do you know how long Gentle Care has been around?
I'd be curious as to how big it is, if there's more than one office, how big the staff is, and how many levels of employees there are. I mean, this woman said she was a counselor. I'm still having a hard time wrapping my brain around that if she was only 20, because it seems to me you would have to have a lot more knowledge to be a counselor in an adoption agency. I find that somewhat ludicrous.
Yeah. They've been around, Michelle, they've been around for 27 years.
Is there more than one office?
Yeah. She told me previously that there's even one here in Florida.
Yeah, see, so the corporation, and it is a business, whether it's supposed to operate through HART or not, the bottom line is it's still a business. So the corporation, as a business, should be more mindful for maintaining their, their carrying persona. They should not want that damaged. And I think that they should be taking a much more proactive stance in cooperating with this situation. If it means they have to kick back the money, they should be cooperating with this situation to make the best outcome come. That's better PR than anything else. Let's just say that they stand their ground and legally they prove that everything has to stand the way it is and nothing can be changed. All they've done is make people not want to deal with them, because if it's that hard to undo something that's from the heart, we're not talking about a business transaction. We're not talking about one business buying another or somebody buying a house or buying a car or buying a product and then changing their mind and wanting to return it. We're talking about lives here. There has to be some different level of ethics and integrity going on here. And this company would do well to handle it with more.
Michelle, we're out of time. This is an emotional issue. Thanks, Carrie, for, she wanted you to know, too, the woman in question was in her 20s. And but the deal is here, we're going to keep talking about this. I'm going to find out where Gentle Care is here in Florida. If it's close by, maybe we could pay a visit and ask them for their point of view.
Sure.
We will keep on this, Carrie. Do not give up. I just know that this is gonna work out. I want to thank everybody and wish you all a great weekend. And for those of you, this is kind of significant considering the story we just talked about. Happy Mother's Day on Sunday.
Right.
And I hope everyone has a great weekend. Bye-bye, everybody, and God bless. We'll be back Monday morning, I hope. Bye-bye. Thanks. Call you in a minute.
Talk to you later, Reen. Have a wonderful weekend,
right.
Everyone.